Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. Season 6, Episode 57, and the Steelers come off a very comfortable...
Hold on, I'm going to hit you right off the bat. What's the narrative? Go.
The narrative is this offense can't be stopped.
Okay.
Steelers come off a 45-10 very comfortable win over the Indianapolis Colts. And after turning the ball over their first two possessions, they score on 7 of 9, which included a missed field goal, a better performance from the defense against an impotent offense. They shut down, to some degree, they shut down the run game. They were able to get pressure on Matt Hasselbeck, Dave. And today's a good day to be a Steeler fan.
And you know that ain't the narrative.
That's my narrative.
The narrative is Brandon Boykin.
Well, if that's what you want to make the story, then go ahead. It didn't make a difference, according to Mike Tomlin.
Mike Tomlin says, don't make the changes in the secondary of the story. And to be quite honest with you, I'm with him.
So it's not the narrative?
Huh? No, that's what fans are going to, that's what people are going to try to make the narrative. David, there's going to be so many hot takes today that it's going to be too hot to take.
Fair enough.
Let's start right there. Let's start where we have spent a good deal of the last couple of podcasts talking about, and that's talking about changes in the secondary. True or false, Mike Tomlin and Keith Butler did exactly what they said or hinted they were going to do.
Largely true.
I agree. They told us that might not be wholesale changes. There might be changes, and that Blake might be rested. That all guys are going to get a chance to redeem themselves. Pretty much everything both of them said was right on the money. Now, and it was hard not to envision Brandon Boykin playing in this game some level of snaps in the nickel based on the play of Blake last week and what Tomlin and Keith Butler said during the week. Now, he only played, in the slot pretty much, as we expected. He did have one interception in the game, but let's not lose sight of the fact that William Gay
made the play.
Made the play. Now I don't. Here's something I have an issue with. Brandon Boykin was credited with a pass defense on that play.
If you can give it to two guys, it was obviously a pass breakup by William Gay, and then Brandon Boykin's there to clean it up and make the catch.
Right. You're giving double stats right there, and I don't like that. It's misleading when you look at the stat sheet. Brandon Boykin, however, along with that interception, did have a nice pass breakup later in the game against who was it? Griff Whalen.
Yeah.
And I thought he played that really, really well. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that play is what we saw him do. For the most part, when he was Philadelphia, with Philadelphia, that kind of mirror coverage there in the slot. But outside of that, outside of the interception and the pass defense, he also had a missed tackle in the game, late in the game, on that crosser by Moncrief, and he also got blocked out of the play fairly easily. On a screen to the left-hand side. I forget if that was maybe the second or third quarter, right around there. Outside of that, really, that's all the impact that he had in the game.
Yeah, look, here's the deal. We saw, Matt Hasselbeck bad early, bad late, just didn't play well. I mean, from the second play of the game where the Colts had the ball, he had Andre Johnson for what should have been a touchdown in the flat, and he made it a really, really bad throw from there. He gets picked off on his next throw. The Steelers got relatively consistent pressure, which we haven't seen a ton of lately. They get the five sacks, and, you know, in the fourth quarter, it was just tee-off time. So, you know, they made the change at the quarterback position. It was the game was over at that point. So, again, you know, we can go back and talk about what happened late in the 49er game where Kaepernick put up a ton of yards with the outcome already decided. You'd rather not see that happen. Everybody can decide for themselves what level of meaning they want to put on that. The plays are still being played, and guys are still giving effort. So, you know, take with it what you will. The pass defense was, you know, pretty good across the board against a, you know, not great group of receivers and a quarterback who didn't play well when there was pressure. So everybody, you know, Tomlin said everybody on the defensive side was involved in making that happen, and I think that's a fair statement.
And boy, did they switch some things up there defensively too, and noticed this early, and also commented on Twitter that it really screwed Matt Hasselbeck up. He was not ready for eight defenders to drop.
No, and he said that, you know, a couple of those sacks early in the game, you know, we haven't seen a lot of this year, but you had a couple of coverage sacks. You also had times where Hasselbeck had all day to throw. I mean, you know, on the touchdown when he finally found Frank Gore, I mean, you know, that was, you know, he had forever. So it largely paid off. It didn't always pay off, but it was a different type of scheme. And look, that's what you got to do. Sometimes, you know, early in the season, the Steelers were bringing defensive backs on the blitz. That was something that was not a common thing under Dick LeBeau, particularly multiple defensive backs. And in this case, the Steelers showed a different look to a veteran quarterback who probably thought he would see something similar to what they showed Russell Wilson. And it, in the large picture, it paid off.
Here's what Hasselbeck said after the game about his frustrations and towards ineffectiveness and the inability to convert on third downs. He goes on to say, "We were a little out of sync with their three-man rush. It's tough. It worked pretty effectively for them. I can't wait to see the tape and try to learn from it and figure out what I can do better for next time." And that, you know, the only thing is that if that, and we saw it a couple of times, especially on that touchdown pass that he had, that short touchdown pass to, who was it?
Frank Gore.
Gore on that. You tend to give him, you know, if you don't get home, you know, sending three, that's an awful lot of time back there for a quarterback to wait for his guys to work open. And that's exactly what happened in that circumstance there. But I do like the fact that they changed it up. It's going to give teams other things to think about here moving forward into the final quarter of the season. I thought for the most part, with sending limited numbers early in the game, I thought they were able to get some decent pressure on Matt Hasselbeck. And it obviously, and we talked about this leading up to the game too, how nice would it be for the Steelers to get off to a big lead where you get teams in and predictable down and distances and you can release the hounds. And that's exactly what happened in the second half. I mean, that's really when those pressures and those sack numbers start to climb there. And didn't I mention something about a strip sack about with James Harrison?
I don't know that you mentioned Harrison, but we talked about we hadn't seen any, and they finally got one.
Yeah, boy, that was nice to see. Now, I think, wasn't Harrison all three of his sacks in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, all late.
You know, I don't want to take anything away from those, but, you know, I think it just goes to show that when you're able to get a team like that down, back on their heels, and know what they're going to be doing offensively, it sure makes things look a whole lot better on the defensive side of football for your team. So
that game was over at halftime. I mean, look, the score's not going to reflect it at 21-10, but it's a situation where, as you say, that's not a potent offense. The Steelers' offense started clicking. As I said, look, in scoring position on 8 and 9 drives, they've only punted 4 times in the last 3 games, and I know – look, there were two series that were turnovers against Seattle, not 4. I know everybody wants to say 4, but they faked a field goal, and last series was a Hail Mary. So I'll give you 2 on that. But, you know, this offense basically hadn't been stopped in 3 weeks.
Yes, and the thing is, more impressed with the Steelers' offensive performance. Now, and people are going to take this wrong, and they're going to take my comments about Boykin wrong as well, too, but from earlier. Here's the thing. More impressed with what the Steelers' offense did last night against the Colts than I was what the defense did against the Colts. Because let's face it, the Colts came into this game undermanned. They had to start, they had a makeshift offensive line there. They were down two starters on the offensive line. We talked earlier in the week about them being without Ahmad Bradshaw. I thought that was a huge element of maybe what Hasselbeck would have liked to been able to do on third down, being able to dump that ball off in that game. Obviously, they were without starting quarterback Andrew Luck, a healthy Andrew Luck. Matt Hasselbeck is what he is with the rest of the stuff around him. And because the Steelers' offense was the Steelers' best defense, I thought, in that game because of them getting that scoreboard out of whack in the first half. And you're right, the game was over in the first half. So don't want to give the defense too much credit in this. More than anything, I want to be able to praise the offense, because that's a Colts defense. It's not awful. I mean, you got Vontae Davis back there. Now, they were without their inside linebacker in this game, which was a huge loss for them. They have given up a lot of explosive plays, but you expected this team to be able to stretch the football field deep, and they did exactly what they were supposed to do, and they scored points in addition.
Yeah, and look, we're seeing the elite play of Ben Roethlisberger. Another fantastic game from him, throwing the deep ball and going back to kind of what I said again after the 49ers game. I made this point again repeatedly in the Seattle game. This is a team that's going to take shots down the field in not typical, you know, down and distance situations. You get third and four, and you get a 68-yard touchdown pass to Martavis Bryant. They're throwing it down the field, and I know people were upset in the Seattle game when they did that a few times and it didn't work out and the drive gets stopped. Well, look, this is the way it's going to be, like it or not. And generally, this has paid off. I know you have the deep ball stats, Dave, and Ben 7 of 14 is that's extraordinary when you're throwing it down the field. He now leads the NFL in yards per attempt at basically 8.88. Only a couple other quarterbacks in the league are over 8. Carson Palmer's kind of right behind him, and that's about it. He leads the NFL in yards per game at 338 yards per game. And look, if this game had unfolded offensively for the Colts like it did last year, I have no doubt the Steelers would have thrown for more yards and put up more points. They just basically didn't have to do that in the fourth quarter.
Ben's receivers left a lot of yards for him out on the field as well, too, didn't they? It felt like Ben could have thrown for 600 yards in that game. As you mentioned, seven of 14 on balls thrown more than 15 yards past the line of scrimmage. At one point, David, and it's easy to go back in your head and think to yourself, man, Ben's really starting to heat up in this game. From that point, that was about the midpoint right there. At that point during the game, Ben had completed 6 consecutive deep ball passes of more than 15 yards down the field. That's quite incredible. He was dropping some right in the bucket. He was dropping them to Antonio Brown down the left side against double coverage. Excuse my French, but sometimes that's just you walking around with a wheelbarrow, if you get my picture.
Yeah. By the way, I don't know that we say this explicitly, Dave. Those guys are just fast as hell, and sometimes that's just all it is. It's a footlet race, and, our favorite line, he's even, he's leaving. And those guys get even with DBs, and they're gone. And really, it was on the deep ball to Bryant for the touchdown and the one you're talking about into double coverage for, whatever it was, 50 yards to AB. They just caught up to the football and outran the DBs.
And if you give your – and I think the other element in there, much like when when you're making a diamond, you need time and pressure, right? Well, Ben had time for sure. And hat tip to the offensive line, because I thought the offensive line played great. And how many times do we joke around? And if you give Ben time, he's going to get some people college open. I mean, that's like shooting fish in a barrel for him last night. I mean, you give him a pocket to step up into. He's just going to pick you apart because he knows the value of the explosive play. You hit on earlier about the deep ball on third down. Memory serves me, 4 deep ball throws last night on third downs I believe all four of them were 5 or less yards to go, and boo-hoo, he only connected on one of the four throws. However, comma, that one went for a touchdown to Martavis Bryant, and it seems like Martavis dropped another one in the end zone on a third down. I can't remember if that was a second or third down. I want to say that it was a third down throw later in the game.
Right at the end of the game, yeah.
But I don't remember if that was...
You give him a drop on that one, the one up high, where that would have been the last touchdown?
Man, if you're going to be great, if you're going to be considered a great receiver in this game, you make that catch, right?
It was a tough catch, yeah. No, I mean, look, I said the same thing. I said, that's a very tough catch.
Hit you in the hands.
Could have made it.
Should have made it.
Yeah, I'll give him could have made it. I'll give him could have made it.
Terrell Owens catch that?
Yeah, well, I mean, Terrell Owens wasn't exactly known for catching everything his way, but you know, if we're gonna talk about him in the same breath as Randy Moss as being his ceiling, he's got to make that catch. That's for sure.
He's got to make those catches, and this is you know, look, I love the kid. I mean, he's gonna catch. look at the touchdowns he's put up. I wrote yesterday, David, about Sunday night being the start of Martavis Bryant's second season. And because I mean, it was 17th regular season game, you know, over 1,000 yards in his first 16 regular season games. My God, almost all the touchdowns that he has. Seems like he's going to score every week, regardless of whether it be on the end around or deep ball or just a short pass down there inside the red zone. But he's still this is what's scary, I guess, is what I'm saying. He still can become a better route runner. He still can become a better pass catcher. And if he does those things, if this is the type of guy that you would just like to see spend the whole offseason down in Florida with those, you know, doing what those guys do day in, day out on the jugs machine. Because if he ever could be, you know, refine those two elements of his game, just a quarter more. I mean, it really just—it's really hard to imagine what the type player that he really could be. Because let's face it, over the last two games, he's really left some plays out on the field.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't have the skill level of Antonio Brown or Odell Beckham Jr. And if he, you know, gets to that level, well, then look out, because obviously he's got physical gifts in terms of size and speed that very few receivers in the league have. So it's quite, you know, obviously quite a trio to have. And I'll tell you, maybe Ben's best throw was the throw to the pylon to Marcus Wheaton. And, when I think about plays that are undefensible, I just don't – when teams run the fade rather than that play, it's always curious to me, because if you take that jab step inside, near the goal line, and can just get the defender to plant his foot or turn his hips at all and then come back and throw it to the pylon, you can't stop it. And, you know, that wasn't an easy throw, and it wasn't an easy catch either, but that was about as per, you know, it's just not defensible. That was really well set up.
Yeah, I'm patting myself on the back, because I called that one right when it happened. Right as it happened, I called it on Twitter, because you saw them use try to go something similar to that earlier in the game, and the timing was off and Ben threw low. So you knew that they were probably going to go back to it a lot of a different formation on the other side later on in the game, and that's exactly what happened. It was kind of easy to call, because let's face it, teams go into each week with the game plans. You remember that article that SI did with Peter King did with Carson Palmer a few weeks ago, and the construction of the game plan? Folks, if you have not read that and gone back and watched those videos, you're really, really missing the boat. But, you know, these teams really can only go in with so many different, you know, plays with different formations, you know, involved in this thing. And that's what makes this thing beautiful, is you can run the same route combinations out of a different formation, and teams a lot of times won't be able to decipher it, you know, you using it before. And that's why I say it was kind of easy to see that they might go back to something to that, with Wheaton on the other side for that touchdown. The good thing is right now you've got all three pass catchers, all your primary pass catchers, contributing, And, heck, they even tried to get the ball to – I'm not so sure. Be interested to know if maybe a little discipline going on with Martavis early in that game. But, you know, to see DHB out there kind of early in the game getting targets was a bit concerning. I think everybody had Martavis on the milk carton on Twitter early in the game. I was being flooded with where is Martavis at. But he obviously – Martavis got in the game, slowed early in the week by a hip injury, but – man, that guy moves like a gazelle after he catches the ball.
Yeah, he was excellent. Jesse James contributed early. Look, D'Angelo Williams, again, kind of we're 20 minutes in here. We haven't mentioned D'Angelo Williams, but a really solid performance. Look, let's get to the negative here, Dave. And the negative starts with Jacoby Jones. And, you know, I'll give Mike Tomlin credit for benching him at the half. You've got to see the mistake of your ways at this point and cut the guy, because – we talked about it after the first game, talked about it after the second game, and then last game he did something good for a change. He returned the ball 30 yards, and we mentioned it because it was so unusual. Then you see the opening kickoff, 9 yards deep, questionable decision, stutters coming out of the end zone, then fumbles the punt. I mean, honestly, I don't know how you can justify putting him out there in any situation going forward.
No, he's a liability. I mean, definitely not an asset. So when you're talking about your number 52 or number 53 guy on the roster, it might not seem like much, but that's an important spot, you know. And if you can't trust the guy to go out there and return kickoffs and punts, which obviously Mike Tomlin didn't have that trust, they're right before halftime, then he's doing you no good. I don't care how cheap his salary is this year. So at this point, you need to cut him.
Do you think he's on the roster when they play Cincinnati?
I will be shocked if he is. There's no way you can justify it. None. Zero. Zip.
Right. And so, you know, is it Jordan?
Sign Ross Ventrone back for starters. At least he's an asset for you on special teams. And as far as the returner is, who the returner is, and, you know, Jordan Todd is a guy I've talked about since the day they signed him, not understanding why they haven't given him a chance to at least one game put him back there for kickoffs and see what he can do. And strangely enough, Jordan Todman was inactive for the first time all season Sunday night against the Colts as Fitzgerald Toussaint got the helmet over him. So don't know what went on there. Maybe someone will ask Mike Tomlin, i.e. you, on Tuesday.
Look, that was surprising, and Toussaint got a couple carries in there. He's obviously been with the team all season, so it's not as if, you know, he obviously knows the offense. Isaiah Pede, whatever, didn't know the offense wasn't good enough. So you have that change. I'm with you. Todman, Wheaton, look, they're not going to re-sign Dre Archer, just the kind of the reality of the situation. But I don't know that you'd love to have Marcus Wheaton back there, but he was certainly capable last year. And let's just be honest about this. When the Steelers signed Jacoby Jones, Dre Archer's numbers were better. The Chargers cut him for a reason. He has now had a month to kind of validate the Chargers cutting him. I'm with you, Dave. This, you know, I joked about it, you know, when he fumbled the opening kickoff that he should have been cut. Then he fumbles the punt. He's just looked bad in every aspect of things, decision-making, commitment, hands. I mean, it's just there's nothing good about it. I don't know how you can keep him around. Look, I didn't think they should have kept Mike Vick around, but at least in that case, your third quarterback, are you going to really honestly have a guy who can come in and contribute if necessary and understand the offense? Okay, and Mike Vick's a good locker room guy, whatever. He's not going to see the field again unless it's a disaster. Jacoby Jones, he's just taking up space.
Yeah, absolutely. And Tomlin, after the game, was asked about changing the punt returns. He says it was obvious that he wasn't holding on to the ball. We have some guys who are capable, although they are established guys, meaning they play a lot of snaps offensively. You would like to preserve them in those instances if you can. Under the circumstance, I didn't feel like I could because he wasn't holding on to the ball. It's as simple as that. And that means it's as simple as you cut him either Monday or Tuesday. Goodbye, end of story, sayonara.
I kind of like the Ross Ventrone idea.
At least you know what you're getting there, right?
Yep.
And if you need a roster spot, you can dump him again, right?
I mean, I'm trying to think if anybody in the practice squad is a guy that you'd like to have up. You know, nobody jumps to mind for me. So, Ross Ventrone, sure.
I mean, unless you want to call Jordan Dangerfield up, I mean, that's a guy that could help you on special teams, I guess. Maybe they gave B.J. Finney a raise a couple of weeks ago, probably to keep him from being pilfered away. So if you want another guard you can throw on the roster and not dress, you can promote B.J. Finney.
That's about it.
That's it.
Sammy Coates is not going to return kicks for you. So the question is, how often do you use Antonio Brown going forward? And look, I said this, the minute they signed Jacoby Jones. They should sign Jacoby Jones to catch the ball inside the 20-yard line. And if there's any chance near kind of the 30 to midfield of getting a punt, it should be Antonio Brown's, job. So I think you'll get back to that. You'll see somebody else in deep situations just back there to catch it, assuming they find somebody that they're comfortable with. And Antonio will continue, depending on game situations, to get opportunities because, we saw it again last night. I mean, the guy's just too dangerous with the ball on his hands.
I think Jacoby Jones has a Steve Sachs disease.
I do love the kind of the people on Twitter, like, is he still on the Ravens, payroll? It's pretty funny. I mean, I laughed at that stuff.
Well, yeah, but you got to get where I'm getting at. Remember Steve Sachs was such a – he got where he just couldn't throw the ball. He had the middle block, And then the more he thought about it, the throws go up 8 rows into the first base side, right? It's almost like Jacoby Jones is trying so damn hard that everything else is just going out. He can't even do the simple things like hold on to the football. So, look, experiment over as far as I'm concerned. As soon as they sign him, I think my first words on Twitter was a 3-letter word, which I use a lot of 3-letter words. I think it was meh. And here we are all these weeks later, and it's less than meh.
Okay, so I mean that's the negative out of the game, and it really, I mean, it's hard to find too many other negatives, Dave. Look, there were some missed tackles for sure, and I was a little bit surprised in the run game that the Steelers, particularly early in the first half when the game still mattered. There were some 7, 8-yard, 9-yard runs by the Colts, but they had to abandon that pretty quickly when they got behind. You get the turnovers, and Jarvis Jones makes a big play, and that was just a terrible throw by Hasselbeck. Will Allen probably intercepts it if Jones doesn't, but Jones made the play. You get Boykin on the tip from Will Gay. You get James Harrison with the strip sack. You get 5 sacks defensively. You get the offense just kind of moving up and down the field at will. I mean, nitpicking for stuff. You had Chris Boswell miss a field goal. Okay. Like I said, there were a couple missed tackles. Maybe Martavis should have made a few more catches. But the offensive line was good. D'Angelo Williams, he had a fumble, but again, another solid game from him. It's hard. They won 45-10, and the score did reflect the game.
And it could have been 65-10.
Yeah.
And Cody Wallace, a negative in there. Owes somebody a cold drink somewhere for bail. He owes Ben a cold drink for bailing him out after an unnecessary penalty. Cody Wallace is just one of those guys that just loves to try to get up underneath your skin. Just not the one step down from Richie Incognito, I think.
And when I look at Ben's performance, there was one really bad throw at the goal line where he tried to force one in on a slant, and, there were 3 Colts there. He threw into coverage. Look, we've seen Ben do this over the last month, and the thing is he's thrown into coverage and gotten away with it, so it's hard to argue. But he's clearly not afraid to throw into coverage, and he's been doing that. So there was the really bad throw on the slant at the goal line where, he threw into triple coverage. But, he's playing the best football of his career by far. He's playing the best football in his career. Antonio Brown's, I don't think either of these guys are going to be in the league MVP conversation, but they're certainly in the conversation for they'll both be Pro Bowlers for sure. AB will definitely be All Pro. Ben probably just misses out on that, but in that conversation with Carson Palmer, Cam Newton, and Tom Brady,
I don't think Ben's because of the game.
Yeah, he's got 4 games to go. See what happens. So, Dave, now that puts the picture, front and center here. The only injury is kind of Will Gay's concussion. Sean Spence was down. You mentioned Todman being down. No other real surprises there in terms of who was active, who wasn't. But so now you look at these games, and Tave and I spent 10 minutes before we got on air kind of looking at the playoff scenarios, and it's still so incredibly complicated running through the simulations that, you know, a ton of different things can happen with everybody having four games left. Suffice it to say, if the Steelers win out, they're going to be in, period. And if they lose two games, they're probably not going to be in. And so the question is, if they lose one, you know, if they go 3-1, will they get in? And the Chiefs are, they're playing great. They're undefeated since they played the Steelers, and they have a relatively easy schedule the rest of the way. And the Jets have a easy two games coming up, and then they play New England at home, and then they play at Buffalo. So those are the games that matter. And both of those teams came back and won yesterday. Steelers didn't get any help from either of those teams.
No, about really the only game that went in their way, and really you can make an argument that either way that that game went would have helped the Steelers,
yep,
was Buffalo beating the Texans. But, yeah, you're right. The Giants let the Jets off the hook. It'd be a little bit different narrative if the Giants had won that game, I think, for the Steelers. Of course, the Steelers would be the number 6 seed in the AFC as opposed to exiting week 13 as the number 7 seed. With the Kansas City Chiefs, it's hard to imagine them not getting one of those two wild card spots at this point, just because, the hardest game remaining on their schedule is a game against the Raiders, who they just beat yesterday by letting Oakland beat themselves. It was a typical game for Alex Smith and the Chiefs. We're just going to sit back and watch this thing and let you turn it over, and then we're going to use 21 putos by the Chiefs offense in that game off of three turnovers by – got to make sure we call this guy Derek Carr.
Derek Carr, right.
Not David Carr. I'm living 15 years in the past still, trying to call him David Carr every time. But, look, that's our hardest game, I think, and that's week 17, isn't it, when they close out the season?
Yeah, you never know what happens with San Diego. But you look at the Chiefs, and look, you know, we're not going to pat ourselves on the back, you know, too much here, but they're a good team. We said that they were a good team when they were 1-5 and the Steelers went to play them. They're 1-5 and nobody believes you, but Alex Smith is fine. If they don't turn it over, they're tough. Their defense, even without Justin Houston, I think in this one, is aggressive and can play. And so, yeah, I mean, the question is, if they do win out, that means they will have won 10 games in a row going to the playoffs. And it's the NFL. It's really hard to win 10 games in a row. And I don't think anybody thinks the Chiefs are an elite team, but plenty of people picked them to win that division this year and be something like 11-5 or 10-6. It's just the sequencing of how it's happened has made it unusual. Now the Jets again, and Dave, I mentioned this to you a couple of weeks ago, their schedule is relatively favorable, and I thought they could win 11 games. And they had a little bit of a bad run after that Oakland loss, and then they played another bad game. But a really bad game against Buffalo, but got things back on track now and, you know, look, Brandon Marshall's a really good receiver. Chris Ivory runs hard, and where they're supposed to make their hay is on their defense. It's been good, not great. Revis has been dinged up and not able to play. Cromartie's been okay. But, you know, both those teams are good. The major difference is the Steelers have a massive advantage at the quarterback position. But they probably have better defenses.
Yeah, Fitzpatrick's not bad, though. I mean,
neither of them are bad.
Right. And Alex Smith doesn't make mistakes that kill him. That's the key thing with him. Alex Smith definitely isn't going to deep ball you to death, but he's also probably not going to turn the football over either. And what a big part of the game that, you know, it's one of those Captain Obvious things that you're afraid as a blogger / podcaster, whatever, to say, well, just as long as they don't turn the football over, they're going to win the game. Absolutely. If you don't
now
turn
go
the
try
football,
and do it.
now go try to do it. Exactly. And that's one thing the Chiefs seem to be good at since really Alex Smith has been in Kansas City. Here's something for you. Since beating the Steelers, of course, they have now they're winners of 6 straight. The Steelers are the only team. The Steelers were able to keep them at 23 points in that game. Since then, the Chiefs have scored 45, 29, 33, 30, 34. Now, I'm not expecting them to get any medals or participation trophies for holding Alex Smith and that offense to 23 points, but nobody else has been able to do it since then.
Well, and maybe we ought to reevaluate what we say about the Chiefs' offense. I mean, and that's the reality of it. This offense, and some of those points, as you pointed out, they're coming off turnovers, short field. Those things make a difference. But, you know, let's give the Chiefs some credit here. And the question is, you know, all of a sudden, and it's highly unlikely, obviously, but is there any chance that, you know, the Chiefs can, you know, challenge for the division? If Denver goes into a tailspin here, you know, the Steelers knock them off, you know, could that come into play? Not likely, but the Chiefs have to be, for sure, as you said, the front runner for the number five, the top wild card seed.
Absolutely. And, boy, Denver really would have to tank, right? Because they're 10-2, and the Chiefs are 7-5. There's four. I mean, Denver really have to go into the toilet here, and the Chiefs, of course, would have to win out, which is very, very possible. The Jets, you have to feel that the Jets are going to drop one somewhere in here. If 10-6 doesn't get you in as a wild card, then oh well. But it should. So, in other words, the Steelers have a margin of error of one game right now. So the question is, which game scares you the most right now? The game next week against Cincinnati, or the game after that at home against Denver?
What's interesting for the Broncos, just looking at their schedule, they get the Raiders at home, and okay, it's a game they should win. Okay, we'll say that. Then in week 15, they obviously get the Steelers. What's very interesting is on Monday night, they get the Bengals at home in week 16. Okay, well, that makes things interesting. So they could have two losses, and then they get the Chargers home the last game of the season. So you would think that it'd be difficult for the Broncos to come back to this conversation of wild card or, you know, but if all of a sudden they did, if that game mattered against the Chargers, well, that'd be a fascinating scenario because under the scenario that we're proposing, the Steelers would have won the head-to-head with the Broncos. So, you know, the Steelers and the Chiefs, that's not a great situation for the Steelers, having lost the head-to-head. And the Steelers and the Jets, you know, too many machinations to play out at this point in time. But if things go according to plan, they could very well end up kind of vying for that last spot.
I'm a little confused, but if I understand what you may have said there is that if the Steelers were going to lose one game, it might be okay to lose to Denver.
Well, I don't think
for their own preservation.
I don't think it matters. But let's say this. The reason
I'm joking, but I mean not. But
you know, I think you know the reason it would be better if it were Denver. It's just the later the Steelers lose in the season, the better if they're going to lose because you know you just want to have fewer games to play with no safety net. So ideally, if they have to lose one game and it's only one game, might as well be the Browns game, win the next three and lose to the Browns. But you know, you'd like to think if you get past the next two, you're going to win the last two.
What's the toughest of the four?
For sure, next week. I mean, Cincinnati's a good team at home, and they'll want to win this game. It'll clinch the division for them right now. It will make it so the Steelers have a very tough road to get in the playoffs at 7-6. Yeah, I think, and the Bengals are playing good football. Period.
I disagree with you. I think I'm more scared of the Brock Osweilers
In Pittsburgh.
In Pittsburgh.
Yeah, no. For me, it's the Bengals. They're playing great, 10-2.
Because I really think Denver's defense is all that. And who knows if they're going to get Von Miller back by then? I mean, remember they're doing all this without him, right?
Yeah.
You know, they had Aqib Talib had to sit out a game for going three stooges. I just think they're a good team when they had a dismal Peyton Manning under center, and right now I think they're even a better team with Brock Osweiler. Now, will the Steelers you know, be able to maybe confuse Brock Osweiler? I don't know. I mean, the kid looks sharp so far. He's got some big time weapons over there, of course, and Manny Sanders and
Demaryius Thomas.
Demaryius Thomas and And to me, that's a scary bunch. I think the Steelers – look, if the Steelers don't turn that football over three times a couple weeks ago against the Bengals, you know?
Well, I mean, if we're going to play ifs and would-haves, the Steelers should have three wins they don't have. I mean, we can debate the Seattle game, but it's certainly a game they could have won. They absolutely should have beaten Baltimore, and they could have won the Cincinnati game. The Baltimore – look, if they don't make the playoffs, the Baltimore loss is going to be one that sticks out massively.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's see. What else do we need to wrap up? Offensive line, really for the most part, hard, you know, they didn't have success early on with the counter and with the split zone. But, you know, they stuck with it as the game wore on. And they were able to run against some pretty stacked boxes, I thought, later on in the game. Pass protection. How many times was Ben sacked? Twice? Once or twice?
Zero, I think.
I thought one for sure.
I'm looking at zero on the stat sheet here. I didn't remember
well,
one.
Well, then he got past the line of scrimmage just barely on one. Or there was.
How about Ben with that 13-yard scamper?
Yeah, there was a penalty on that one sack though, right? Holding.
Yeah, right.
Defensive holding. That's what I remember right there. Yeah, no sacks and Ben 13-yard scamper. I think Alex tracked that down. The last time that happened was what? I forget. It's been several years since Ben has had a run that long. He needs to get down.
The offensive stats are terrible. I mean, you know, Gore was their leading receiver with three catches. You hold T.Y. to 3 for 36. Moncrief gets one, and it's late in the game, you know, in the last drive of the game, basically. Andre Johnson has two catches for 44. It did nothing. Gore averages 3.5 yards a carry. The Colts don't have any rushing first downs. You hold them to, you know, what, 11 first downs in total on the game. They're 3 of 14 on third down. The Steelers 8 of 13. It's just dominated every facet of the game.
Yeah, if you throw out that first, what, 7 minutes of the game?
Yeah, right.
You know, Steelers really, really held it together at that point. You know, they even started what? Didn't they start 0-3 on third downs? I think to start the game, and they finished 8 of 13 for 62%, 522 total net yards in the game, and it could have been 700 if you ask me. It sure did feel like he threw for more than 300 and whatever yards.
I think it was at 330. Early in the third quarter. So it was, you know, shut it down time.
Yeah. Like we mentioned, you like to see Bryant hold on to a couple of those balls. Jesse James, nice to see him get – now, here's what we want to see out of Jesse James. We want to see him play better without the football in his hands.
Yeah, block better.
Block better. We know he can do the other stuff, and we saw that at Penn State. He can do the other stuff. So now it's all the pre-draft concerns with Jesse James now. We know the game's not too big for him. He got over those preseason drops or what have you. Now you just want to see him mature into an all-around tight end. D'Angelo's fine. The whole offense. Jordan Berry, you'd like to see Jordan Berry, you know, even though he only punted one time in the game, you'd like to see him be able to boot it out deep out of that end zone.
I got a question for you. Where was D'Angelo Williams' second fumble?
What it in like the second quarter? Hold on.
I just don't remember the second fumbler. I don't know if I
he got right back on it. Let's see. 1:28 in the third quarter.
So the end.
It was a run to the left side.
Huh.
Mike Adams, I think, got the ball out there, and D'Angelo got it back.
Yeah, I just didn't remember that one. Okay, so you think Denver's a tougher game? I think the Bengals is a tougher game. We'll have a beat writer coming on Wednesday. How about Eagles Depot getting after the New England Patriots?
Yeah, look, not having Rob Gronkowski and a few other Julian Edelman, certainly. The Eagles only scored 14 offensive points, right?
They had a punt return and a block punt and a punt return
and an interception.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
down 14-0, pretty impressive. To, you know, one of the narratives that was actually, I think, off the mark was, you know, the players quit on the coach and stuff. And I don't think that was the case. Patriots, you know, the Bengals are the number one seed now, right?
I don't believe so. Yeah, I wouldn't run around with your Eagles.
Hey, playing the Foxborough and they won.
I wouldn't run around with your car car flag.
Tied for first place tonight.
Hanging out there because, look, the narrative of that game yesterday was the New England Patriots lost that game. the Philadelphia.
You won't even give me a moment of positivity, huh?
No. In fact, Bill Belichick's probably going to fire somebody today because of that.
What was the biggest surprise in the league yesterday?
That game.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah, Cincinnati is the number one seed. Denver's the number two seed right now. New England's the number three seed.
And that's good for the Steelers because that means that game against the Jets later in the season is going to still matter. So.
Absolutely. And here's the other thing that we're hoping for, too. I think as Steeler fans, you need to be rooting for Buffalo to win right now because you want Buffalo to still think they have a shot at this thing in week 17 when they play the Jets.
Yep, and, you know, that Denver-Cincinnati game's going to look, you know, it's a very big game on the schedule in week 16, that Monday night game. So, you know, that's a big one. So, you know, interesting to see. And you know, the Steelers looks like came out relatively healthy. We'll see what happens with Will Gay tomorrow. I expect the press conference to be uneventful and maybe brief because I don't think there's a ton to talk about in terms of, you know, strategy or questions or things that were done differently. Dave, the only other thing I would guess that I would ask you is you look at the defensive snaps and Jarvis and Bud Dupree started. The other two guys started the second half. The other two guys played a lot of the fourth quarter when it was just tee off time. I was surprised the snaps were as uneven as they were. Excuse me, uneven as they were.
They're not going to take James Harrison off that field when he thinks he can get a sack. Plain and simple. He's not coming off that field. You're going to have to shoot James Harrison, shoehorn him off that. I'd like to be the guy that has to go out and try to get him. It just ain't going to happen. Is it fair?
You know, I think you'd like to see Jarvis get those reps, particularly late in the game when the outcome's decided. Let him tee off and work on his technique and his pass rushing moves.
Is it how many is that? Because look, let's be quite honest here. How many sacks did James Harrison come into the season needing to break the record? Didn't he need like 8.5? Was it?
That sounds right.
And he got 3. that was stat padding. Right there, and he has 5 on the season there. Expect James Harrison to get plenty of opportunities the rest of this way to get some sacks. I guess that's what I'm trying to say there. Jarvis has shown us a little more bend. Not a lot, but we are seeing a little bit of bend out of Jarvis. You'd still like to see him kind of finish some of these things more. Bud Dupree, you know, had some pressures. Really, if he doesn't beat you to the edge, though, right now, he doesn't have any other counters, so he's going to have to kind of work on that stuff. I was expecting Stephon Tuitt to have a much better game than he had Sunday night. That didn't happen. Shazier and Vince Williams sure did rotate a lot, and for you know, unless Shazier was dinged up.
Vince Williams came in for that one series and made 4 tackles on the series. 3 consecutive plays he made the tackle. I think he made 4 on the series. And he also recovered the fumble. Vince did some nice things.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, no Sean Spence in that game, so it was the two of them. Be interesting if you asked some sort of question along those lines to Tomlin about the rotation of Shazier and Williams, just to get him to rule out whether or not Shazier was dinged up, I guess, as far as that goes. Cornerback rotation moving forward.
Pretty much the same thing, and I think you were on it on Wednesday talking about obvious passing downs. Boykin's in there. You know, Blake comes out 75% of the time and Cockrell 25% of the time. So just a little bit of a rotation. I'm going to assume William Gay is going to be fine out of this whole thing, but I would expect the rotation to be exactly like it was last night kind of after the first series or two.
I agree 100% with you. I thought Will Allen played a better game. Of course, love Will Allen along up at the line of scrimmage a lot more than I do off of it. He really plays well in the box, in my opinion, much more so than he does as a deep safety. So it is what it is. It's a game that they should have won. That I think even when we were talking about predicting the scores, I said this is probably a game the Steelers should win. I forget what I said, 44-10 or whatever, but they won't. Well, they ended up winning exactly how they probably should have won that game, in my opinion there. So props to them. Don't want to take anything away from that. But now definitely a tough game next Sunday against the Bengals. And who are we going to try to get to talk Bengals?
Well, Paul? We're good. We got a lot of choices.
All right, anything else to kind of wrap this? Oh, can't not talk about Antonio Brown and his spider monkey move. how original was that?
Something different.
You like Tomlin's, you think Tomlin got a little bit too salty there?
Yeah, there's no need for that. I mean, just kind of laugh it off and move along. I mean, I'm not going to, whatever.
You think he'll be asked about that or the linebacker rotation the rest of the week?
It'd be interesting to see. I don't think anybody's going to ask about the linebacker rotation. They did ask that a little bit after the game last night. But, I don't know that he'll be maybe he tried to kill it, nip it in the bud about anybody asking about the celebration.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I'd much rather him do what he did there instead of flipping and possibly landing on his back. So let him have fun. Heck of a season he's got going so far. Boy, if Ben stays healthy, he's shattering Calvin Johnson's record probably without a doubt there. Folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can complain to me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can write me nasty emails at the terrible podcast. It's at gmail.com. Can't even remember my email address this morning. The terrible podcast at gmail.com. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at terrible podcast. If you want to donate, we still accept those things. You can do so by going to SteelersDepot.com and you'll see the donate button up top right in that navigation bar there. Wow. Been up a long time.
Get some sleep. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.